all your sporting news, reviews and previews. This is the Sports Desk.
Welcome to the Sports Desk on Sin. We're here to warm you up on a pretty wet and wild Melbourne evening. I'm joined by Matilda McDermott and Jack Coggett. My name is Ethan Rigg. Guys, how are we doing?
I'm doing very well. Today was quite sunny, and then Jack got caught in the rain.
Soaked right now. So it's unfortunate, but I'm sure we're in for a great show tonight.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to bring some news to you guys. First of all, before we get into it, is that the Sports Desk will be returning on Fridays on Sin from the 26th of April. That is really exciting.
Yes. Double shows. 2 weeks. Two days a week. Yes.
2 weeks out. Yeah, and basically, have you guys got any news?
I do. So, yesterday we had the Japanese Grand Prix at Suzuka Circuit. It was held on Sunday at 3 p.m. our time, an actual race we can watch. Incredible. I saw so many people going to bars and watching it, which was really awesome that we can still sort of celebrate F1 after the Oz GP. And can we all guess who won? Different than the other week.
Different winner.
Max Verstappen had taken the crown again. And it was actually a Red Bull 1-2. They had qualified 1-2. So, yeah, pretty standard for them. But we had Carlos on the podium, your favourite, Ethan.
Yes, he has once again got the better of Charles Leclerc. And I'm just wondering, are Ferrari starting to regret that decision? Because with every week that goes by, it seems that that is what we are seeing. Every race he's been in this season currently, he's been on the podium. And he just looked a lot quicker than Leclerc out there yesterday.
Yeah, well, maybe he's just motivated to get a job after this year. He wants to add to the resume. We also had Daniel Ricciardo, who brushed with Alex Albon, and it ended in a do not finish for both of them. And that also ended in a red flag. So they got two laps in and it was a 15-minute delay. So I switched on the footy and I just started watching that. We also had Yuki Tsunoda, who scored points at home. He's the first Japanese driver to do that since 2012. So it's pretty impressive. I'm sure he was very happy with that. We also had Oscar Piastri in eighth, so scoring points for us again.
More solid points for the Australian and for McLaren as well. Lando Norris came in fifth. The one thing I wanted to ask, with Yuki Tsunoda starting to pull more points and Daniel Ricciardo having a rougher start to the season, do you think his spot is in the greatest amount of jeopardy it's been since his return to Formula One?
I mean, he definitely has a lot of pressure on him to perform. He took a seat from someone else not even halfway through the season. And that puts a lot of pressure on a driver. So certainly, yeah, he's in trouble. You know, they took a driver out just to put him in and he's not performing as he promised. So it'll be interesting to see how that sort of works out at the end of this year with silly season and everything. Jack, do you have anything to say on that?
Yeah, the incident on the weekend was unfortunate, more of a racing incident rather than anyone's fault. But it's harmful for Danny. He really does need to put some good performances in. Last year, I'd say his only standout was P4 in Mexico. Haven't seen anything to this calibre this year. There was already the ultimatum given to him, or at least rumoured, that he had to improve over the next two races. We saw some improvement in quali, barely missing Q3, but it really depends on this next race in China. He does need to give something and to do better than Tsunoda.
Yeah, he does. So the next Grand Prix is the Chinese Grand Prix. It's on Sunday, the 21st of April, and is at 5 p.m. our time, so we can
Another
watch it yet
race.
Again.
That's at the Shanghai.
Third in a row. Yeah.
Happy about that.
That is very, very interesting. Coming up after this, we have got the Premier League, a three-horse title race, but we're going to have to put you on hold with the XX quickly. You're with the Sports Desk. It's a big week in the Premier League title race. Now let's talk some football. But before we get stuck into moving week in the Premier League, I want to take us back to the previous match day, to an absolute classic at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea 4, Man United 3. And Jack, I want to talk about Cole Palmer quickly.
Yes, absolute star for Chelsea at the moment. It feels sad to have let him go on from Manchester City, but he's found new colours there. His penalty kicking right now is elite. I don't think he's missed one all year so far. And he just seems to be so clutch for the Blues right now.
He definitely does. 25 goal involvements in the Premier League alone for him. And for this one, for Manchester United boss Erik ten Hag, it would have been so frustrating. 2-0 down early. The Red Devils came back to lead 3-2. And with 2 minutes of stoppage time to go, it looked like the 3 points were heading back up to Manchester before two late goals from Cole Palmer to seal a first senior hat-trick and give the Blues a much-needed 3 points. That is the latest a team has ever led a game and gone on to lose in the Premier League era.
Manchester United keep breaking records, just the wrong ones this year.
I've got to say, as somebody who grew up with United scoring late-minute winners, it's really nice to see it the other way around at the moment. With pressure on him at the moment, United then, literally last night, came back to record a massive draw against Liverpool to stop the Reds right in their title-chasing tracks, leaving the Gunners at the top of the league and leaving your Manchester City just 1 point behind the two.
Yeah, it's a nicer spot to be in than what I would have thought we would be in this week. Look, it's very tight at the top right now. Arsenal only lead on goal difference, which they have quite a sizable lead in. But look, anything can happen. And I just want to take the moment to talk about Man City's golden boy, Kevin De Bruyne.
KDB.
In his 250th appearance for the club in the Premier League, he netted a brace and an assist to get his 100th goal for the team. And I think you'd have to agree with me on this right now. He's definitely the best Premier League midfielder. Is he the best midfielder in the world right now?
I think beyond best midfielder, if we're talking ability alone and how complete a player is, I think that Kevin De Bruyne is the best football player in the world. I don't see anybody who is better than him in terms of as an overall footballer. The ones who come close to me maybe right now are Jude Bellingham and maybe somebody like Kylian Mbappe. But there's nobody who's got the quality, who's got the drive, and who's got the vision and just the brain that De Bruyne does. And he was absolutely incredible in a game that City started very roughly in. 1-0 down early thanks to Mateta, and Palace had them on the ropes in the first 10 or 15 minutes until an absolutely wonderful goal from De Bruyne brought them level. And after that, especially the second half, City just seemed to enter cruise control and Palace were no chance. And that really closes the gap now. This is the closest title race I think we've ever had in the Premier League. Three teams separated by 1 point, the top two on goal difference. It is anybody's race at the moment because of that draw at Old Trafford yesterday. Are you still back in City to go all the
way? Of course I am. I feel like we have a slightly easier draw than, say, Arsenal, who I think they have the hardest, and Liverpool's somewhere in between. I do want to bring up one team, though, that has the ability to control all three teams' fates, and that's the Spurs. They play each of the teams in the last couple of rounds. Going off their form, they're a bit shaky at times. They just had a 3-1 win, which puts them in fourth over Villa. Do you think the Spurs have a chance of winning any of those games?
I think, first of all, this morning's win for Tottenham, massive. It was absolutely huge for them against the Nottingham Forest side, who have been hit with a points deduction in the last few weeks. A lot of turmoil around that club right now. And it was a must win for Tottenham, but it's that classic kind of Spursy banana skin game where you just think they might slip up. But I thought they showed a lot of class and were way too good for Forest. And I think as well, Tottenham are a look-in in every single one of those games. Their record against City is very good. The Emirates, a North London derby, they drew 2-2 early in the season. Bringing that back home is going to be some atmosphere. And Liverpool at Anfield is not an easy game, but Tottenham's record again there in the last few seasons has been very good. They got a title stopping draw against the Reds, a 1-1 there a few seasons ago under Conte. So Tottenham should be bringing a lot of positivity into all of them. And I honestly think they take points off any of those three teams. Not only does it decide the Premier League title, but it decides their own bid for a Champions League finish. Although Aston Villa do have a more favourable run home. And speaking of Forest and the bottom of the league, that also is going right down to the wire. Everton, their first Premier League win in 13 games. Oh, that was the worst game of football I've ever watched. It was terrible. But it was good to see Dominic Calvert-Lewin back in the goals again. And just what I wanted to say is it's very funny how when you go a long run without a goal, when you get one, everything starts to fall for you again. And the example of that chase down on Burnley's keeper to score what turned out to be the winning goal in a game that it wasn't pretty from Everton, but they were, I would say, comfortably the better side. Forest losing, but the massive result is Luton Town's win over Bournemouth at Kenilworth Road, Carlton Morris in the last minute. What a story they're producing this season in the Premier League. And do you think they're a chance?
I feel it's very tight down the bottom, and it really just does depend on the form that you carry. You can only play who's in front of you. And, you know, it can be at the moment down there the best team on the day wins, regardless of previous form as well. I think Luton are as good a chance as anyone down there at the moment.
I would agree, and it must have been nice for them to get a reverse last-minute winner over Bournemouth, given that they were 3-0 up when they played the Cherries at the Vitality and ended up losing 4-3. It's a real season for title races right now, but there's one that looks as good as over, and that is over in Germany. Bayer Leverkusen won this weekend away at Union Berlin. They're now 16 points clear of Bayern Munich, who were 2-0 up at newly promoted Heidenheim before throwing it away and losing 3-2. What do you think's going on at Bayern?
It's just a fall of a titan, isn't it?
Yeah.
11 years straight, they've won the title. Thomas Tuchel has now lost 25.5% of the matches he's managed for Bayern, which in any other sport would seem like, oh, that's not too bad. But this is Bayern Munich. This is an absolute titan that should win pretty much every season. They've got unlimited funds. They just bought Harry Kane for $100 million. And poor old Harry just doesn't seem to get any trophies, does he?
Just touching on Harry Kane, he's been so good for Bayern Munich this season. Top scorer in the Bundesliga, comfortably. And there seems to be a bit of a narrative around him at the moment, a kind of you can take the man out of Tottenham, but you can't take Tottenham out of the man, where he comes to Bayern, comes to an established winning team, and they just can't get the job done. I don't think it's really fair for that to surround Harry Kane at all, do you?
No, I don't. I feel like there's problems there that aren't of his making, or even really the forward line's making a lot of the time. I think their problems are behind the ball, in the defence, and even in the midfield, where things just don't seem to be connecting well at all for Bayern.
Yeah, I would agree. There seems to be a lot of disconnect, and they need an overhaul. And one league where there wasn't any action had a complete overhaul of league matches this weekend was Spain, as the Copa del Rey final took over La Liga. And Athletic Club Bilbao, who we mentioned on the show a few weeks ago as making a Champions League push, they beat Mallorca on penalties to win the Copa del Rey, a massive achievement for the Basque club, a club with a proud tradition of using only homegrown players. And another feel-good cup story over in Italy, we have Catania, who a former Serie A side, back-to-back relegations and bankruptcy in 2021 has seen them fall all the way to Serie C, the third tier in Italy. And now they're in the Serie C Cup, in with a chance of the promotion playoffs to return to Serie B. It's a real feel-good story for them, Jack.
Absolutely. This is a great story. You just love to see that smaller clubs come up when things haven't gone well for them in the past. And often, it's too often seen that we see titans fall and never come back up. So it is nice to see some come back up every now and again.
And speaking of titans falling in the NBL, it was the Tasmania Jack Jumpers who prevailed over Melbourne United. Winning a thriller in Game 5 by 2 points. What did you make of that final series?
This is probably one of the best final series we've seen in a long time. Just so, so tight. So many clutch moments from so many players. Talk the Jack McVeigh buzzer beater, the Delhi one last-minute winner as well. And then this last game in Melbourne, on opposition ground, the Jack Jumpers went and did it. I think that it's such a good story as well. They've only had 3 seasons now, and they've come in and they've competed hard in each, and now they've, you know, finished their fairy tale.
Absolutely, a great story and a monumental effort by the Jack Jumpers to win their first NBL title. And Matilda, you've also got some basketball news for us.
I do. So over in America, in the collegiate league. Caitlin Clark has wrapped up her collegiate career before going into the WNBA. And let me just tell you how great she really is. So in a college basketball game against the LSU Tigers, She led the Iowa Hawkeyes to the Final Four. Ultimately, they lost. But in that game specifically, she scored 41 out of the 94 points that the team had scored, with 12 assists and 7 rebounds, and she made 9 three-pointers. That is really incredible.
That's a
especially
serious effort.
Yeah, especially in women's basketball. She's really brought a lot of people onto the sport. I think there was Jason Sudeikis there at a game. So, yeah, really great that she has, you know, showed off her skills and brought more eyes onto women's basketball, which is what we definitely need.
Absolutely. I think that's a brilliant story. And unfortunately, no Ted Lasso, like fairy tale Sudeikis in attendance. But
yeah.
It's a great thing to see that women's basketball is growing in America and drawing more attention to the women's game around the globe. It's definitely something we need more of. We're going to go to another break here on the sports desk, and we're going to have Vanilla Lassos. And now it's time for some footy.
Well, to kick off Gather Round, we took a little bit of a departure from footy and put on the boxing gloves in what was a pretty fun night all around for some fans across the nation as they saw some of their favourites and not-so-favourites take a few hits. Nathan Brown took out Kane Corns on points in their first match. Anthony Rocker knocked out North Melbourne legend Corey McKernan, and Dane Swan dominated his former teammate Dale Thomas in what was a pretty clean debacle there.
What do you make of all of this?
Oh, it's a bit of fun. I think the BF, you know, it's a once-off, really.
Yeah.
Who cares, really? It's a bit of fun.
Something new for the AFL to maybe start Gather Round, perhaps?
And your bit of boxing, bit of cash.
Well, as the league flocked to Adelaide, we started with the Crows against the Demons. Melbourne got home in that in the end.
Yeah, they survived a last quarter fight back from the Crows, which was quite interesting since Melbourne have been doing pretty solid for the past couple of games. And yeah, Crows have been doing all right. It was 63-78 for that one.
Another big result for Melbourne, you would think, is they're really looking to make a statement this year that they're still within that premiership window and still a side that are looking to compete. And Adelaide, I'm not sure about the Crows.
0-4, crow over.
0-4s for the Crows.
0-4, yeah. yeah, it's looking a pretty rough season for Adelaide. I think their biggest concern right now is their midfield mix. It's abhorrent. They have got so many accumulators, but they have no real weapons that deliver inside 50 to a pretty good forward line, but they're just not getting the service they need. At the moment, they're just being let down from centre bounce, whereas the Ds were just clean. We saw Petrarca tear open the game. What more can you really say about the Melbourne Demons? It's been their strength for a long time now. The question is whether they can do it in finals, which for the last 3 years they haven't. So
Yeah. Unable to take the pressure.
Strong regular season team, but they just haven't been able to make it stick in September. And another team that's having a poor start to the season is North Melbourne. They were...
Sorry, Jerry.
Yeah. Apologies, Jerry. They were battered, for lack of a better word, by Brisbane, losing by 70 points. And this was convincing from the Lions. This was like the team we saw last season that made the grand final and came seconds away from a premiership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a good performance by the Lions, really just taking out a team that they always should have won against, and get their first points on the board. I thought Danaher was his mercurial self and appears at times and then goes distant for others, but a 5-goal, 4-behind game with 20 touches, you can't really go wrong against.
That's exactly what Brisbane would want from their key forward, really, who, if he's on, usually it means that the Lions are also on song as well. And another team that won big was Port Adelaide. They beat Essendon by basically a similar margin, 69 points. Very similar score lines in that one. What went wrong for the Bombers?
Everything.
Yeah. Very sloppy game.
It's rare to see in the game right now centre clearance dominance that bad. I thought they were just absolutely torn apart from there. Connor Rosie looks like the future star, probably going to be a Brownlow medal winner in one day.
I've got his stats here. 36 disposals, best half of the season so far with 3 goals, 26 disposals and 4 clearances. So
wow. It's just insane numbers.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I also want to give a little bit of a shout out to Jason Horne-Francis as well. I thought this was a breakout game for him, especially his second half of the game. Really tore it open, a lot of clearances and a fair few good deliveries inside 50 as well. However, speaking of inside 50, I'm still not convinced about a Port Adelaide forward line. I feel that Charlie Dixon is good, but he's not a star in that will tear open games all the time. And more controversially, I feel like we need to talk about Jeremy Finlayson now after
Yes.
homophobic slur. There's no place for it in the game at all.
No. Absolutely not.
We're definitely not living in an age where that is acceptable. And, you know, it's something that should definitely, he should be remanded for and reprimanded for, I should say. And, you know, they need to set a precedent with that. I think it's something that has aged out so long with football, but, you know, it's come back and they just need to really come down and, you know, give out a solid punishment for that.
The one thing I will say about that entire situation is I'm a very big fan of the amount of coverage that it's getting. It's not something that the AFL is just looking
brushing
to
off, yeah.
be like, sweep under the carpet, this happened, we'll deal with it privately and move on. There's been a lot of outrage within the AFL community and across a lot of the channels at what has been said, and it's really good to see that in that way the AFL is giving it the scrutiny it deserves, and hopefully the punishment matches the ridicule it's received because there's no place for it.
Yep. And on Saturday, we had the West Coast Eagles versus Sydney. Sydney 104-78. And that is a considerable effort for West Coast. I mean, they're going up against a team that you'd sort of expect them to get, you know, beaten quite badly. So the fact that they had scored that high against a team like Sydney is pretty, you have to give them a round.
They also held the lead for a very good time
in that game.
At the halftime break, they gave Sydney a real scare and a real game, but the Swans, to their credit, were too strong in the end. They showed that and they turned up and got the job done, which is very good for them. But positive signs, if you're a West Coast fan, I thought that they showed a lot more fight.
Yeah, they did. And of course, Sydney's Isaac Heaney has continued his incredible start with 26 disposals and 7 clearances in this game.
He's an absolute star, making a real Brownlow charge. I also want to mention, though, the most hyped prospect in forever, Harley Reid kicking his first goal. And what I thought was a pretty good display. Maybe not quite a breakout game, but he looks to be tough as nails and breaking tackles wherever he walks.
He looks like this game, it very much looked like he was settling in to AFL. Like, he's finally found his feet within the sport, whereas I feel like he was thrown into a bit of a baptism of fire in those first few games at West Coast. And his performances in some parts of those games and the results really showed that. But he was a lot better today, and I'm glad he got the credit he deserves. But moving on to the most controversial game of the weekend, we had the Dockers and the Blues. Carlton won by 10 points. Are we going to talk about the deflection?
Yes, a controversial end to a pretty good game that was tough, contested, and a good, enjoyable watch. Unfortunately, this isn't really how you want to see games decided. However, the AFL has come out and said that the deflected kick should have been picked up. However, the dissent call on Fremantle player Jordan Clark was 100% correct. So, look, you can only do what you can with the results in front of you. Yeah. And look, Jordan Clark threw away extra points at the end of the day.
Exactly. It was a real test of temperament, I thought, and a real test of the maturity of this Fremantle team. The first time they've really coped with a lot of pressure in a game, and Jordan Clarkson's reaction to fold like that is just, if you're one of his teammates, it's a little bit unforgivable. And it's something that's cost them dearly. A game that, even if they were 4 points down, they were still a chance. They were still a massive look-in in that game, and inevitably it was something that the Dockers never really came back from.
Yes, also on Saturday we had the Bulldogs v Geelong, Jack.
Yeah, this was a nail-biter.
Yeah, a slim win. 91-95, Geelong taking the win.
Yeah,
what did you think of that?
I was pretty happy with the boys. I feel like we should have iced this game at multiple points, but poor goal-kicking kept the Doggies in it. However, I feel like just need to talk about the Dogs. The three of their mids, Bontempelli, Liberatore and Treloar, all had 107 touches combined to a Cats midfield that is kind of held together by glue and duct tape at the moment. So, look, Bevo really needs to do something better off this list. It's so many star players, so many high draft picks, and yet it's just lack of finals, or not going deep into finals at all. Something needs to change.
Yeah,
there's a team in there that's a premiership contender, I think, anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
And especially in a game like this against Geelong, where the midfield and their squad is so depleted right now, the Dogs really needed to make a statement and not just win that game as a close one, but win well, and they just couldn't close out. And speaking of another close game, St Kilda just about got the job done against Richmond after a very slow start. You must have been pretty happy at halftime, Matilda, but that might have changed.
Yeah, I watched the last bit. I was watching the Grand Prix, actually, and so I was switching back and forth, and I managed to catch the last quarter. And it was quite disappointing because we were staying strong against St Kilda. We were putting the pressure on, and we just couldn't, you know, get those goals that we needed to. We had to go to two score reviews, one of them being called a goal and then being taken as a behind. So it was just, you know, it's promising with the Tigers. They've got a lot of injuries at the moment. We had Lynch, Bolter and Baker out for this game. And, you know, they're pretty prominent forwards and very key in that forward line. So I'd like to give a little shout out for Shai Bolton. He was incredible that game. And, you know, just giving the younger guys a go as well. But, yeah, St Kilda.
Sucked in, Matilda. Sucked in, Matilda. Yes, it's Liam Cole. I'm ill at the moment. That's why I'm not on the show. But how good is Ethan being as host?
Yeah.
Not as good as me, obviously, but he'll get there one day, the young fella. But just on what you pointed at the start of the show, Ethan, we are back on the sports desk on Friday, starting April 26, which is super exciting, Matilda. You know, we're the strongest show on the network, let's be honest.
And he's not biased
at
all.
A lot more presenters coming our way on the sports desk, which is super exciting, and we are only getting stronger and stronger. So never in doubt the Saints game, never in doubt the win. But yeah, Shai Bolton, he was unbelievable. 4 goals, 19 disposals. Some of the stuff that he can do on the field is just awesome.
Yes, incredible.
There's one player for St Kilda as well that I want to give a bit of a shout out to, and it's Wanganeen Millera. He's just a smooth operator. He's a smooth footballer.
As we played a couple of weeks ago, well done me. But he is a gun, Malera. He definitely creates a lot of our scoring opportunities. He's not afraid to use the ball in the middle, and he was unbelievable. He got us back into the game, so well done to him.
Definitely. And for the final game of the Gather Round,
no,
we're looking
no,
at
no,
two, more.
Got two you, more. You've glazed over one.
Glazed over.
We had Gold Coast v GWS, 89
to... every little kid dreams of playing.
89 to 117. I mean, GWS continue to look strong. I mean, we're going to call it. We're going to say that they're going to make it all the way to finals and take the premiership.
They look the real deal.
Yeah, they do.
They look really, really good. I'm not sure if the Giants are fully premiership material yet, but in the early stages of the season, all of the signs from GWS are positive.
Mm-hmm.
There's not one negative that you can take out of this, and they beat a Gold Coast side who have had a very good start to the season and have proven themselves very tough to beat, I think. And it just shows that the Giants are really about taking some serious strides this year.
Yeah, and I want to give a shout-out to the Suns. I thought they were really solid for most of the match. They really kept with the Giants up until, you know, the fourth quarter. But in particular, I want to give a shout-out to debutant Sam Closey, 22 touches and a goal in his first game on the wing. Absolutely lethal. And also Mac Andrew, who I thought had a bit of a breakout game down back, amassing quite a lot of intercepts in a pretty tough battle with little Toby Green up there as well. Just good to see new players popping up every week.
Yeah, definitely. And it's good to see that the two expansion teams, the two recent ones in the AFL, I know there's been a lot of talk about a team in Tassie recently, but the two most recent expansion teams, it's good to see them really progressing and showing that the league is growing and there's a lot of good quality in the AFL. And speaking of, the last game of Gather Round, what a game that was. Talking of slow starters, the Hawks gave Collingwood a pretty handy head start and just couldn't reel them in the end. That was a pretty tough one to watch.
The Ginnivan Cup. Yes.
The Ginnivan Cup. Yeah, two goals for him.
Yeah, solid outing for him. A bit of hustle and tussle with his ex-teammates. Pretty good game to watch, though. I know a few neutrals at the ground were definitely cheering the Hawks more than the Pies, but unfortunately they couldn't get it done. I feel that was on the back of some pretty good midfield work from the Pies. And also, I just want to give a shout out to a long-time defender at Hawthorn, who has only kicked 3 goals in a season ever, kicking 4 in one game as a swingman, Blake Hardwick. You love to see little things like this. I really love swingmen. It's such an underrated part of the game where you can play multiple positions and pull out games like this. Unfortunately, couldn't quite get it done, but what a great game from him.
He was brilliant yesterday, and it's such a great genre of footballer, swingman as well, someone who can play anywhere, who's versatile. And it was something that you didn't really expect, and that was what made this game such a landmark performance for him. And it was really unfortunate that his efforts didn't get the win that they deserved in the end for Hawthorn. They just started too slowly and couldn't make up the difference in the end. They had the chances, they just didn't take them, I don't think.
Well, that about wraps up Gather Round, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it does.
Now we look forward to round 5, or technically round 6, I suppose.
Yes.
starting Thursday night, Melbourne versus Brisbane Lions at the MCG. Should be a cracker of a match if Brisbane come back into form. I'll be tipping the D's, though. I feel that on form alone, the midfield should stack up pretty well as well. So that's my tip. What about you guys?
I'll be going with Melbourne as well. I think even if Brisbane are in premiership contending form again, which they look like they turned a corner at the weekend, their record at the MCG is still not great.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
Melbourne are in a very good place right now. They're playing some brilliant football, and I think they'll be too strong. Matilda?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, it's a home game for Melbourne, and, you know, Melbourne fans everywhere. So, you know, I think you're definitely right that Melbourne will probably, you know, get there in the end and beat Brisbane.
Another interesting clash on Friday night as the Dogs host the Bombers. This one, really, Jack, for the Dogs is a must win if they even want to think about September this year.
I think it's a must win for both teams. I feel the Dogs should take it. That midfield mix of Libba, Bont, Treloar is, I'd say, pretty on par with the Essendon's. However, I feel that positions around the ground, the Dogs take it. The Essendon edge, though, has been pretty blunt this year. Can they do it? Can they not? I don't know. This is a real test for them.
I'd agree. I think it's a real test for the Bombers to see what they're made of and which direction they'll be going in 2024. And for the Western Bulldogs, I feel like this has a bit of a make-or-break feel to it. If they don't win this, I see the road back to the finals being incredibly tough. What about you, Matilda?
Yep, again, have to agree. yeah, definitely. It's going to be an interesting... They're kind of almost on par with each other, so hopefully it will be a close game. I really like watching those kinds of games, so, yeah, it should be good.
Now, next up, the early game on Saturday is my shout for game of the round, GWS hosting St Kilda. This one really could go either way. The Giants are in fantastic form right now, but although they didn't take their chances early on at the weekend, I thought St Kilda were much better than Richmond for a lot of that game. And I like what they've put together so far this season. Although I'm still backing the Giants to get this one done. Matilda, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the Giants will probably take this one. I mean, if it was a close game against Richmond for St Kilda, it will probably won't be a very close game for against GWS. So,
Jack?
Probably leaning more towards the Giants. However, the Giants don't really have a good record at Manuka Oval in Canberra, where they're playing, so it's technically a bit more of a neutral ground. The Saints, I feel like if they can activate the real Ross Lyon flood and neutralise Toby Green's impact, it goes a long way. I feel that, you know, Rowan Marshall is a better ruck than Briggsy, so maybe there's a bit of a midfield clearance battle win there for the Saints too.
I think so. And just going through the rest of the games on Saturday, Carlton host the Crows. I think the Blues will be too strong.
Yep, that's pretty clear as day for me, going on the Crows form.
Gold Coast host the Hawks up in Queensland, and it's hard to see the Suns losing that one, unfortunately. Yeah.
Poor you.
Port host Fremantle in Adelaide. That could also be an interesting game, but I'm thinking the Power at home are going to be too strong. The Dockers have turned a corner this year, and they look like the side that made the top four a couple seasons ago. But I think Port Adelaide also, if they really are serious about premiership contending, this is it.
Yeah, personally, I just don't see avenues for Freo to score. If the midfields are going one for one, the backs of Port Adelaide should neutralise the pretty mediocre forward line, Fremantle, and I think the Freo forwards are not. Sorry, the Freo defence won't be able to hold the Port Adelaide at bay.
Yeah, I agree. And moving on to Sunday, Geelong host North Melbourne down at Cardinia Park. I think the Cats are going to be way too strong at home.
Speaking for my own team here, I feel we'll be. Should be pretty strong here. I feel like we're going to be managing a few players. I wouldn't be surprised to see Hawkins, Stanley rested and probably bring in Neil and Conway.
And also West Coast, Richmond to round out the round over in Perth. This could be an interesting one. I think the Eagles improved, but I think the Tigers too strong.
Yep. I hope for a Tigers win. Let's do it.
Right. I think it's time for a bit of Minute Mondays.
Yay!
And now the sports capital becomes the quiz capital. It's the Sports Desk Minute Mondays.
That's right. And this week it is on tennis.
Yay.
Are we ready?
I love tennis.
Here we go. Who won the women's title in the Australian Open this year?
Anya Sabalenka.
That is correct, Jack. How many titles does this mean that Sabalenka has now won?
Two.
No. One. Which Australian tennis player has won the most Grand Slams?
Margaret Court.
Correct. Well done, Jack. When is the last time an Australian tennis player has won a Grand Slam?
2019, Barty.
Ash Barty, but which year?
2021.
Close. 2022. And who is the current world number one for the men's and women's?
Novak.
Yes.
And Swiatek.
Swiatek is correct, Jack. Well done,
Jack.
That's a very solid effort. And I think, well, this week's winner is pretty clear. Very well done, Jack.
Congrats, Jack. You've won again.
Well done. And that is all we have time for this week on the Sports Desk. Just a reminder that as of the 26th of April, we'll be back both Mondays and Fridays. Thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure. Good night, Melbourne.